Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guests.
Thank you, Sarah. Welcome to the Building a Tax and Financial Planning Advisory Business podcast series. In this episode, we're going to talk about how to build a financial planning practice or expand into planning services. CPAs are forward-thinking and relationship-oriented professionals, taking the time with individual clients to think about their life goals and financial needs in an integrated way has always been core to the profession and has been growing steadily over the past decade, with CPAs broadening into new areas that now benefit greatly from their expertise and insight a CPA can offer. These are exciting times that bring new possibilities for CPAs who are willing to embrace them, finding success, longevity, and a satisfied client base. Maybe you're looking for ways to deepen client relationships, or increase revenue streams, or ways to increase your company's value. Embracing the evolution of the profession by broadening service from tax into other planning areas such as estate, retirement, risk management, and investment planning can help you do that. If you're considering expanding or formalizing tax and financial planning advisory services, let this podcast series and the resources outlined here guide you on your journey. What learning tools on the panel that you might be using or have used in the past to get more information in the financial planning arena, to gain more knowledge in some areas that maybe you didn't have in some of the education you've done in the past? Any ideas on that?
Yes. Let's say I was just making a list of a few different resources. There are numerous microphones. There are a lot of resources out there, and with the body of knowledge so big, I think it's really key to subscribe to some of them. Of course, the section, PFP section. And then also, I don't know if we've talked about it or if you've seen it, but we have a relatively new section mentoring program. So take advantage of that and get connected with a mentor. So I think having an accountability partner is very helpful, and it will help you stay on track. Some other resources that I use, definitely follow Michael Kitsis and Bob Barris. I would follow all of us on social media because there's several of us make numerous posts on a regular basis that are informative and connect you to interesting articles. I'm sure everybody else wants to add their own to the list, so I will just stop there.
I just want to let everybody know that the Bob Barris's newsletter, the Inside Information, is part of your PFP section membership. So if you are a member, you're getting that automatically, as well as his media reviews, which is great. So for anybody in the room quickly who doesn't know about the media reviews, Bob will review all of the industry publications and send out a quick summary of the articles along with, he'll rate the relevance of it, high, medium, or low, but he'll also give you the link to the whole article if you want to read it. There's a lot of people that subscribe to that PFP section benefit just for that sole purpose and the time savings that gives you. But his newsletter is invaluable as well.
Yeah, it's true. If you sign up for those periodicals, and let's say you want it in print edition, you're going to get about this much every month. So having that summary is fantastic because you really don't want to go through those. But you'll just keep piling them up and then throw them out somewhere.
There's also a couple of links, and if you're not familiar, PFP News comes out weekly. They come out, and basically all they're doing is giving you bullet point, kind of high-level articles. There's a lot of publications. Another one, Advisor Perspectives, is one that we find really helpful because it's professionals in the industry that blog. And Bob Hoopsher, he'll actually be doing, I think he's doing a panel on Wednesday. That's his kind of baby, but it's really high-end financial advisors, CPAs, planners that blog on various topics, and there's a lot of things that are interesting.
It's a little specific, but for IRAs, there's, if anybody has heard of Ed Slott, he has a monthly newsletter that comes out every month that just goes into the really specific details and gives really good examples of scenarios. But everything you'd ever want to need to know about retirement plans, primarily IRAs, Roth IRAs, SEP IRAs, but he covers other types of retirement plans as well. That's a really great resource too.
And Wednesday, he's speaking at the conference on Wednesday, if you're staying for the conference, Wednesday morning.
And if you, from the tax and estate planning area, Bob Keebler is a name you want to write down and follow. Bob Keebler will brilliant on the estate and tax planning side and does a lot of podcasts through the AICPA.
I want to ask the panel, what type of deliverables are you giving your clients now? Maybe not what you did in the past, but what are you doing now when you've finished a financial plan or you have ongoing plans? What kind of deliverable are you handing them something, or is everything electronic?
Everything we do is electronic, except we try to give a summary to-do list at the very end of the initial discussions so people know what they're supposed to do, who's going to do it by when.
And that gives an actual written piece of paper?
Yeah, it is a piece of paper, but it's also good as an email so that they've got it. And we have it then. It gives us a way to be able to follow.
And all of our financial plans are electronic as well. But at every meeting, we take an agenda. The clients really appreciate that. And it helps us remember, because a lot of times we're going in the meeting and we need information, or we're planning on giving a lot of information. At the very top, it's family update, so that they know they have time to tell us everything that's going on, and we take the time because we can get focused on the task rather than the person. So at the very top of the agenda, it's about the family update, and we list all the family members, and they really, really appreciate that, and it gives them a chance to talk and let us know what they really want from the meeting. And then of course we list all areas that we're working with them on. And if there's nothing to discuss that day, we'll just say, well, put in there no comments today. But they know that we're working on it and it's part of our plan, and they keep that in focus. And then the other deliverable we bring is entity charts, whether it's their estate planning diagram. And we usually take that quite a bit because they always forget. Almost every meeting, well, now where did I say that money was going? How much is that person getting? How much? So we bring the estate diagram at every meeting just so they have it, and an entity diagram if they have a family office structure or own businesses or have trusts. Even if they don't, we're going to bring a diagram for them because a picture is worth 1,000 words, and our clients love those three things the most of anything we do because it lets them see where everything is and what they have.
Anyone else anything different than what's been said?
We send a lot of the same things, and I can't overemphasize the benefits of the agenda, by the way. And also sending the agenda to the clients in advance of the meeting is even better, and giving them a chance to alter the agenda in some way. We also take all these documents, the agenda, financial plans, estimated net worth statements, the diagrams from the estate planning, we put all that in their online vault so that they can always go back and see what those documents were, and they sort of have a library of that on hand if they ever want to pull.
I also start by asking my clients how they want to work together. Do they want a binder, or do they want to meet electronically, and give them that option? And there's still a lot of people that do want a physical document to refer to. So I think that's important. But I also, regardless if there is a binder, still using the vault and still loving the aggregator on eMoney so that there is a electronic location for us to communicate with each other.
I think the other thing is, we do it as part of the agenda, but we talked about prioritizing with the client, because I don't think many of us do the comprehensive financial plan, which Dirk said, you want to be careful using comprehensive, but I used to call it the coffee table material. Merrill Lynch had a great one that was hardbound, and it was every client would, they'd bring it in and say, this is what I got. You don't want to do that. So you want to do piecemeal and you prioritize. And so that's part of the agenda, letting the client say, okay, this is what we talked about. This was the top action or top item we wanted to solve, but let them readjust that. So every meeting, and the more you get them involved in the process, you'll find out there's a lot of items we missed the first couple of times, and life happens and things change. So it's just a good tool.
We send out a meeting reminder notice to folks, like you do if you have a dental appointment coming up or a doctor appointment coming up. We send out a meeting reminder note a couple of weeks ahead of time, as was mentioned, to say what's on their mind, what might they want to talk about at the meeting, that it kind of brings it back into their head that, oh, yeah, we want to make sure we talk about this. So it helps facilitate that initial conversation of, well, what's the topic of interest to you today? What's going on? Next item, I was talking with one of the attendees about engagement letter. And we are CPAs, and we like our engagement letters, and we find it's necessary. You want to outline what you're going to be handling with the client. We talked about comprehensive, and Dirk said how we shouldn't be using comprehensive, but we don't have that in our engagement letter. But specifically, are you doing pieces of a plan? Are you doing 10 pieces of a plan? Are you doing 3 pieces? And what kind of engagement letters are you using? And especially, let's say, if you're doing a tax practice and a financial planning practice, how do they differ?
I mean, mostly if you got a tax practice, that's going to be your common tax, and they're dreadful now because the attorneys have taken over. And if you look at the AICPAs, I mean, so we keep that separate and on its own from that standpoint. You're going to have if you're doing the investment advisory, you're going to have an investment advisory contract that you're going to have with the client. You're going to have the Schwab documents, and that's something the SEC is going to want. And then to Ted's point, if you're doing different projects, and they tend to be, you need an agreement, we're going to do this hourly, or agreement that we're going to do this fixed fee, and what we're doing, you know, outlining the plan or the pieces. Anybody else?
We use engagement letters for everything, whether it's in compliance work or the PFP engagement, and our PFP engagement letter says what we're going to do. That's kind of page one. Page two says what we're not doing, which goes on in all of page two and almost into page three, that we're not registered investment advisors, we're not giving you investment advice. It's a lot of knots. And then that bottom of page three rolls into page four, says we're also not selling you anything. So we don't sell any insurance, we're not getting paid by anybody else. And then page four says this is what our fee is going to be, and the only way we get paid is by you, and here's the dollar amount.
And the PFP section has great templates for engagement letters on the website.
I think one difference, we actually have the client sign our engagement letters, our PFP engagement letters, where your engagement letters on tax, usually you're just sending it out along with the, they're signing them now? Wow, I haven't done tax in a while. They have to sign them? Wow. You have your folks sign your tax engagement letters? Wow.
Yeah, and don't
just send out a letter today. Yeah.
And Ted, I think it was mentioned yesterday, but don't forget about 7216 too. So, you know, you need to make sure you're getting that separate disclosure, that separate authorization that's Treasury mandated for you to be able to use their tax return information.
Yeah, and particularly if you're doing both businesses and you have the tax and the investment, because in our shop we get the same people on both sides, but I'm basically telling the client we're sharing your information with us. Same thing with your privacy agreement. We have to say that we're sharing with our other, you know, the same firm, same individuals. The clients kind of laugh at it, but make sure you cover yourself on those types.
Do any of you use any tools with clients? They just come in with whatever they want, or do you send people things ahead of time for them to complete? Are there any processes that you might use where the clients are bringing something back to you that you sent out to them to prepare?
Well, I start with the confidential questionnaire, which is available on my website, and there's also, and that's what I ask them to complete. It's 4 pages, and as you can imagine, personal information, just a brief summary of their assets. But there are some questions about their financial preferences, and do you and your spouse usually agree about money? Is it more important to you to work longer, retire now? And I, in the last few years, I've added in there how important are socially responsible investing or ESG type issues to your investment decisions. So getting at some of those issues in advance, and then if they want to, not they don't have to for the initial meeting, but if they're enthusiastic and feeling like they, even if it's not me, but they know they want to move forward with financial planning, there's a cash flow questionnaire and a risk questionnaire, so they can, you know, start to move their process forward and a list of documents. Because I think for so many clients, the initial stumbling block is just getting organized. So that's half the battle. And I've had a variety of clients say, that was informative, just getting organized to come in to see you. So all of that's right there on my website.
Oh, anyone else using website or paper product or anything that they want gather information ahead of time?
We use a risk assessment tool. It's a web-based tool. It's a company called Finimetrica, where we send in a link and a setup for them to log in, and it's an individual. So each, if there's a couple, each one of them take the test separately, not a test, an assessment separately. It's a series of questions, and it comes back with sort of a risk measurement, how risk tolerant they are. And that is not something we use mathematically per se as we implement it, but what it is a really good starting point for the initial conversation. It'll tell us, there's probably two different ways that we use it. One is if you have a couple and they're very different in their risk tolerance, it's something that's important to know going into the meeting, especially when you have a spouse who's more quiet and afraid to talk about these kinds of things. And respecting their risk tolerance is good to know that up front. And the second thing is if you're meeting with somebody initially and you're looking at their investments now, how does that compare to what they're telling you their risk is? Once again, I'm not saying it should be different, but it's a good conversation piece that, well, your investments are quite risky, but you've told me over here that you're pretty conservative. Why is that? Let's talk about that.
And there's probably, we use that tool also, and there's probably a couple times we'd like to use it after a stress point in the market also. And it's a pretty good tool, so it's not as, the answers are as different as you'd expect, but having a client take a couple looks at that. The other thing, since we're talking about clients, we've been talking about kind of existing clients and tools. The other thing I think you need to learn is kind of a screening call at the beginning. So you can be selective on the clients you bring in, and you can waste a lot of time and get way ahead of yourself by trying to gather information and send checklists out to somebody that's not an appropriate client or doesn't fit with kind of what you do. So I think you need to, on the entry level, before you even meet or take a meeting, have a screening call with the client, kind of go through what their objectives are, what, you know, what they're looking for, what they're doing currently, and why they're leaving what they're doing currently, and get an idea of some of that. Because a lot of times you can save yourself a lot of time by, you know, just having a short call on the front end and say, you know, if they're looking for day trading or, you know, buying stuff that you're not going to do, then you can save a lot of, you don't want to start wasting a bunch.
And that screening call sometimes will, they may have been referred by someone who we appreciate referrals from or whatever. So we may determine on that screening call that is not going to be a fit for different reasons, but we may still take the meeting. But it's important to go into that meeting knowing what the situation is and how you're going to work through that and communicate that up front. So we're going to do what we can to help you today. We're going to try to lay out where you are and define the objective you're trying to get to. And it may be that we're not the right people to help you get there, but we want to provide some value. And so we're happy to take an hour and sit down with you and help you do that. But much better to do that, to understand that before that meeting starts, than to get halfway through that meeting and kind of go, oh boy, you know, this, for whatever reason, a personality or other reasons, it wouldn't be the right situation. So that screening call has worked really well for us too. That's a great, great thing to start.
Yeah, go ahead, Brooke.
I've found that my website, just in and of itself, because I express my personality there, is a pretty strong screener. And so that's very helpful. And most, personality-wise, I find that most of the people who decide they're even going to reach out and call me are somebody that I would at least consider working with. So I find that interesting. And I've had potential clients, I mean, many, many potential clients say, once I saw that you had your dog on your website, I knew you were a good person. You would be somebody I'd want to work with. I'm a dog lover or I'm a horse lover. And it just cracks me up that there's lots of financial advice out there. So I think it's very important to express your own personality. so you attract people that are...
No horsing around on your website. It's direct. Good. And that leads into marketing. What types of marketing are you doing currently? Is it just client referrals at this point in time because you've got so many clients and you just keep firing them down there, Dirk? Or you've fired more clients in this day and a half than I have.
Because it's me, in essence, the available amount of time is pretty limited, and so I don't have to have a lot of new clients, but I'm always looking for new client relationships because it's interesting, it's fun, and there's a sense of vitality that comes in talking and looking at new settings and those sorts of things. But I have literally probably turned down 2 out of 3 proposed engagements for years of, you know, new things coming in the door. And the vast majority of new clients for me come from clients. I don't know if we said that earlier or not with other people, but, you know, I do get some. We actually went into this new relationship 6 months ago that was a referral from one of the state planning attorneys. But, I mean, it's, you know, that's more unusual than it would be from other clients.
Michael, you've done client events where you brought speakers in or you've done things like that. You want to discuss how that was it successful? Did it work? Do you still do it?
So, yes, we do client events occasionally. I found it to be, in the past, more of a existing client strengthening experience than it is a new business development experience. And I'm also in New York City, so, A, the cost to do one of these events is pretty high, and, B, most of the people kind of after work want to just sort of get out of town, if you will. Whereas if you're in the burbs or in a more residential sort of environment, it might be easier to have everybody over to the club for dinner or drinks after dinner or something like that and have a speaker. But I recently had a client event and there were, for the first time, some prospects. So while I had all these bad experiences, we kept trying. We just had a good experience where we had a handful of prospects there and it looks like 1 or 2 are going to become clients. It is a very time-consuming experience, though. There's a lot to be done to set it all up, to get the invitations out, to follow up with everybody, to record the RSVPs, to follow up to make sure they're actually going to show for the food that you've laid the cash out for. And then you want to make sure that you handle that right on the spot. So you want to make sure all the people on the firm know who's going to be there, that you've set up to make sure that everybody gets some attention. If there's people in the room that you want to make sure you introduce, whether it's the speaker to certain clients or to, you know, this client doesn't know this other client might be actually a really good connection or those kind of things. And then the follow-up afterwards. So touching everybody again, saying thank you for coming, and then finding those prospects that were there and seeing how to follow that up. It is a big commitment.
We've done some client events, too, where the invitation says bring a friend. So we're inviting our existing client base. We're asking them to bring a friend. Not that it's required to get in, but we don't say it's required that you have to drag somebody along, but we offer that, and oftentimes they will bring somebody along, a neighbor, a friend of theirs.
And we've had more success in small group kind of situations versus, you know, trying to bring a bunch of clients or a bunch of prospects together, and you want just warm leads. And I think we've commented that you're going to attract the type of clients, the personality you have. If you have, you know, if it's you or your staff, you get involved with charities, volunteering and getting on boards, those type of things of charities, becomes a really another way. And you're probably getting to now it's, again, it's the one-on-one relationship, but you're meeting somebody and it's not on their finances. But when you get involved in the roles you're going to be are financial driven when you're on these boards now. And so that they're going to see that you're a leader in that area and you provides a lot of opportunities. And it's a slow process, but if you get in the right charities and something you're passionate about, it can be really, I mean, we've had several clients. One, it's for abused kids that we've been involved with for almost 30 years now. And the pipeline that we've had from that, that's been the most successful outside marketing tool we've had.
Anyone else, any different kinds of marketing pieces, tools, or whatever you've used?
We don't market per se, but we're very involved in the community, and especially the chamber and the different organizations that the chamber is involved in. And just from volunteering and helping and meeting all those business owners It's just a great source of finding new clients just in a very natural way, not with any kind of marketing at all. And that's been really good.
Yeah, sometimes just the word marketing makes it sound different than it is. If you're, you know, we give different times we give presentations to attorneys, and we just deliver it as information. Here's tax information that affects the kind of clients you have, and boom, 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 boom. We don't, other than our name and phone number being on it. It's the same thing with being on nonprofit boards and so on. You're just trying to do your thing. You're just trying to help. You're just trying to participate, and it's a byproduct more than it is. I think if I got my head into this is a marketing thing, we're going after new clients, it doesn't work. At least it doesn't work for me. So you used to go into it saying, we're just going to provide information. Hopefully this will help you. And we're here to help. And so you're just building relationships like was mentioned. That's all you're doing.
And a lot of they have the tax practices too with the tax law changes and stuff. We did some stuff with a lot of us went into our churches. But if you think of the churches and a couple charities, but you think about the fact that the new charitable deduction rules and the itemized deductions and the lack of benefit and clients are concerned, and these charities all now have difficulty figuring out how their cash flow is going to run. But you go in, if you do a short presentation on donor advised funds, and volunteer, you know, at the church, we just did it. They had us full of, and we actually had quite a few people go to a couple of these sessions. And it brought in clients. They weren't clients, potential clients then that were just interested in doing donor advised funds, which just gives you an entryway into, you know, some expertise. But that's something that all of you in the room probably have, you know, background from the tax planning side that opens up avenues to do a lot of things.
Again, none of us work for AICPA. We do volunteer for AICPA. And one of the reasons we volunteer, Andrea and Sarah, the team is just a great team. We keep talking about the PFP section. If you're not a member of the section, it does have, and it's listed here, a lot of different valuable resources that I've used. I'm sure many on the panel have used. We could have stories about some of them. I picked up an investment client from a broker-dealer just by using Broadridge Advisor, looking up net unrealized appreciation, printing out a 3-page report on what it means and how it saves you money, and it took all 10 minutes. And we ended up with their assets from a broker-dealer because the broker-dealer didn't have any idea that this person could do that kind of thing. So just that one tool for 10 minutes, I've had this client now for 12 years. So I've got a lot back on that one little investment. So that's just one little story. I'm sure some of the panel has stories of other things that are available. The growing advisor, from a retirement planning standpoint, and this seems to be the focus of a lot of larger firms that are doing financial planning, is the retirement piece. We started looking at maybe millennials, but unless they're in Facebook and they have a tremendous amount of money, most of them don't have a lot of money. And not that we couldn't help them, but when you were 25 or 30 years old, did you think of retirement planning? Did you think of the kinds of things that Sarah's nodding yes because she's accountant. As an accountant, you probably did, but most people don't. It's kind of a tough target market, but a very good target market, 10,000 people a day retiring that need help. So focusing on that area, I think, is a good thing if you want to grow your practice. We've got the Engage Conference, the Personal Financial Planning Summit, 3 days where it's kind of this setting, as opposed to the rooms you're going to be in where we're going to have 500 people and a lecturer. It's more like this setting where you get to interact with the speakers and learn more about that topic than just the 45 or 50 minutes that you're given.
2 seconds on the summit. So the summit is a personal financial planning event that's really designed to be like a retreat-style event. It is a 2.5-day event. It's been in California the last couple of years. So this January it'll be in Austin, Texas. And the Barton Creek Resort. And the theory behind when we put it together was it should be like a study group on steroids. So the attendance is sort of capped at about 120, 110 or so is the maximum amount of people that'll be there. The sessions are longer, but the sessions are driven mostly by interaction. So the speakers are all told that they cannot present for more than 60% of the session, that 40% at a minimum of the session needs to be interaction where there's questions and answers. And sometimes the best questions and answers are the ones that happen in the audience, not necessarily from up front. And then there's a lot of after session activities, some networking events that we do, and some fireside chats at night where we'll have additional presentations in the evening around fire, and some people will stay and talk. And it's all the meals kind of inclusive in the event. So it's a real like getaway, if
and
you will.
It's different than probably any other conference you've attended. Like Engage here is amazing. It's the most technical, advanced financial planning conference. Summit is not technical. It's more practice management, dealing with staffing issues, succession. So it's a totally different feel, but it's very much attendee driven. It's not a classroom lecture style at all.
A quick example of the session will be, we're going to be talking, having some an expert come in from the industry talking about sort of what are the major changes that are going on in the industry right now, and what are you going to be doing for 5 years from now to be prepared for that. We'll have somebody talking about mindfulness and financial planning and working with people in that area. So there's lots of different sessions, but they're very non-technical oriented sessions.
Another piece in the PFP area that is in the PFP division, and if you join, is these guides, practical guides. Guides in each of these areas are updated each year, kept up to date each year by the folks that have authored each one of these, and from A to Z, what you need in each of these areas. So very good guides that you could follow if you have questions, can't remember a certain thing on estate planning or elder planning. The books are anywhere from 50 to, I think, the fourth volume set is about 2,000 pages that Steve Siegel.
That Social Security one's a little weak, but outside of that,
yeah.
Ted authors the Social Security.
And action steps that you can take to get things moving. And I think it was Jean-Luc that developed this last year.
I think all of us would probably emphasize that at least taking the first step is the most critical. So don't hesitate. And as we said earlier, in general, our biggest regret is not starting sooner, so please start yesterday.
And I think you met people here over the last day and a half, and you're, those of you that are staying at the conference will have others. In addition to the checklist, if you have somebody that holds you accountable to some of that stuff, a lot of us met at conferences like this, and you kind of, the relationship grows, but if you have somebody that holds you accountable to reaching some actions, we all get back and we get busy and life happens. So yeah, that's another good tool.
Yeah, we talked about meeting each other at this conference and volunteering on this panel. And I call these people and write to these people with a lot more intimate things than I do people that I live next to. You develop relationships in this community that are very valuable from the standpoint, yes, we'll get into some of those conversations. We get into some deeper things than just, hey, what are you doing? How'd you change your engagement letter? But I think we know each other's families. We know what makes us tick, what we like, what we don't like. Scott keeps me up every night when I'm out here in Las Vegas. I'm dead by Thursday. I mean, things like that. You just
usually broke.
That too. So
Ted and I do sessions at 10 o'clock. It's so, table.
So if you come to this conference on a regular basis, you're gonna meet the same faces and the same people, I hope, as we have over the years, and develop that relationship where it's a person from another town that you can bounce something off of if you've got an idea about something or a question that you have that you haven't seen before, but somebody else that you knew from this conference has seen it. We're going to end with one best piece of advice from each member. Let's go down the panel with our one best piece of advice. So you're going to go out there and you're going to all start these financial planning practices in addition to your tax practices. What one piece of advice does each panel member want you to take away to say, this is what you got to remember? And Dirk, it was tough to start with you yesterday because you said, I'm new. I don't even know what I'm supposed to be saying at this part. So we'll let you give the first piece of advice so that by the time we get to Scott, they're all used up.
Yeah, you can only give one piece because you got to give me a shot at that.
Okay, so I'm going to take less than 60 seconds. Identify what really is your best client and don't do anything other than that. Know what your value is and just focus strictly on that. My 60 seconds are almost up, Tim. Regardless of any spiritual or religious background you might have, you might want to take a look at a book called Love Does by Bob Goff, G-O-F-F.
Dave?
So there's, from this viewpoint, there's a lot of notepads and iPads and laptops and whatever, all taking all this down, and that will no doubt continue through the rest of the conference. So my piece of advice would be, at the point when you're finished here, whether that's today or you're going to stay for the conference, whatever, is close those up and just kind of look yourself in the mirror and just say, am I ready to go? Because you know more than enough. You have more than enough energy and enough passion, and really you know how to get started. So kind of put away the details long enough to make a commitment to yourself to just start. And then, like anything that we do, it's always helpful to be accountable to somebody. So tell somebody about your commitment to get started. It might be your spouse if you're a solo advisor in a bigger firm. I know there's political issues to getting it going or whatever, but it still needs one person to drive it, and it's going to be you. So tell somebody else in the firm, and just don't let yourself back off from this at all. Don't come back next year to get a refresher on how to get started. I mean, you know everything you need to know. So my advice is to soak it all up, close the book, close the laptop, decide to go, and when you hit the office next, whatever day that would be, make the list of the first client that you're going to talk to and get going.
I would say decide if you're going to manage assets or not, and then get a mentor. And get a mentor. If you're not managing it, get a mentor who doesn't manage. If you are managing assets, then get a mentor who is managing. And write down your top three goals that you want for your financial planning business and work through those with your mentor. I'll just give you a quick example. And the AICPA has, or the PFP section has, a mentoring program. And Jenny called me to help her get going because she was so afraid that she couldn't do it. And in less than two phone calls, she had her goals down and she was actually doing it because she didn't trust herself that she was making the right kind of goals. And it's not that I gave her any great advice. It's just having someone to talk to and to articulate what you're feeling. And all her fear that came out, I was able to share with her, you don't have to worry about it. This is all you have to do. And we made, before we hung up, we made the appointment for the next phone call. And she had to have her goals accomplished for the next phone call. And she kept to it. And she is now starting her financial planning business, and it's 3 years sooner than she thought she would be able to. So I'm talking too long, sorry.
No, get
a mentor after you decide what your model is.
We know that Jenny's phone number was 8675309, right?
It's sad that I remember that, isn't it? Ted had the wrong
number. I had the wrong number, but I had the tune. You haven't heard that one?
Getting late.
Jean-Luc.
I want to say 3-20 minutes a day about a topic you're really interested in, passionate about, or relevant to your client, to the clients you want to serve. Before you know it, you'll become an expert on that topic, and people will come to you. And so I've been told that you first have to be good to do good. And so by becoming an expert on the topic you're passionate about, you'll become really good at doing some good that provides you a career you can be really passionate about. So
No. He keeps scratching things out as you guys are talking.
Tough act to follow. Definitely you should be doing all of those things. I would also say to round all of that out as well, maybe write a quick vision of where you expect to be at this time next year. And so, you know, we can all kind of celebrate the progress that you've made, in the year. So in June of 2020, where do you want to be? A vision, I guess that would be a vision quest.
Vision quest.
Michael.
So I spent a lot of time thinking about what I call the value of advice. There's been some papers written on this. I think Vanguard and Morningstar wrote some pretty big papers trying to quantify the value of advice. And I think a lot about it for myself as well as for when I'm selling, when I'm talking to a prospect and trying to show what value I have to offer. And somebody once told me about the four C's. And these are the four things that you can list out to give you the confidence to know that you have this and to explain to your potential clients that you can provide these benefits. The first one is, in no particular order, the first one is competence. We've talked a lot about that over the last couple of days, and you're all far more competent than you give yourselves credit for. The second would be counseling or coaching, depending on which word you're more comfortable with. And we've talked about that a lot in the way that we did the role plays and just helping clients. And please don't feel like you have to have the answers on those soft skills as well. It's really more asking the right questions and letting them come up with the answers on their own. The third one is continuity. We talked about that a little bit today in our role playing as well. And there's nothing wrong with continuity being a big part of the value that you bring to the table, not only for a partner or a spouse, but also for the next generation, potentially. And finally, convenience. I think we don't focus enough on that one. There are a lot of people that need the convenience of having an advisor do something for them. It might even just be that they'll get it done, help them to get it done. So I think those are the four C's: competence, coaching, continuity, and convenience.
I'm going to go last, Scott, so you can keep scratching.
There's how many on the panel? And we're at the 25 now on the one item. I like Michael. He used four C's to get to one item. Jean-Luc, I'm going to take a little bit of his because I do think if you focus on what you're passionate about, that you focus on your passion, and that means immerse yourself in what you're passionate about, become that expert, and whether it be retirement planning or insurance, whatever it is that you want to focus on. And when you take that to your clients then and show that passion, then you're showing how much you care. And you can't overemphasize the importance of how much you care, because there are a lot of brilliant people that are doing financial advising and doing what you do, but how you care, that's what will get the client. And that's where they don't care. They care that you care about their future, their family's future, and that differentiates you from everybody else, because everybody else is looking for an answer or looking for the math part or a little extra return. So show you care. And I got one last one, because I'm terrible. And somebody had talked about scaling and how do you go about some of these things. And Michael throws the term out, essentialism.
Towards the head.
Okay.
To scale it.
Okay. Oh my gosh, he's tired. But essentialism. So I do some stuff on essentialism, and is it Greg McMahon? There's a professor at Stanford, I believe, that we had speak here a few years ago. But it helps you prioritize where you should be focusing your efforts. And I think several of us would get tied up with all these different things. So I think be passionate, show your clients you care, but do it efficiently. Would be my.
Actually, getting into financial planning out of taxes was a step, but it's opened my eyes to a lot of things. And I want to follow up with what Dave said about closing your laptops and just starting. But before you just start, close your eyes. Close the laptop. Close your eyes. What do I want my life to look like 5 years from now? I really enjoy what I'm doing now. Do I want to do more? If I retire, do I still want to work? Yeah, I do. I really love this. But close your eyes. What do you want your life to look like? When you start talking to your clients about their ideas and their goals, think of how we go through life. We go through life and we're doing. Got to get the kids off to school. We got to get to work. We got to get home from work. We got to make dinner. We got to watch this certain show together, and then we go to bed. And you do the same thing the next day. Are you having fun? Think about what is in your life that's fun.
and how do you get to achieve that? Financial planning and investment management, I think, is something you can leverage more than you can filling out tax returns. Not that I'm nothing against tax returns, but just stop for a moment, think about what it is that you want out of your life. And I think if you get into the financial planning, you're going to appreciate that a lot more. You're going to think about that a lot more. But think about that. You know, start your practices, but think about where you want them to be in 5 years and what does that life look like and how can I have fun with what I'm doing, not just carry on every day. Thank you all for attending. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Ted Sarensky. If you enjoyed this podcast, I highly encourage you to visit the Planning and Tax Advisory Services Hub at AICPA.org/grow-advisory-services to learn more about the why, the what, and the how. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit AICPA.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.